Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Geekable. We hope your week is going well. We hope your weekend is going well. Any new listeners joining us, thanks for giving us a shot here. We think we have an episode that's really going to captivate you. And you know what? Let's get into it. We have, you know, talk of the town right now. We have Kelly Thompson on for our podcast episode, and we could not be more excited. Kelly, thank you so much for being here today. It's an honor having someone like of your prestige on the show. It's amazing.
Thank you so much for having me on. And as I said to you before, I'm sure you will quickly be disabused of any prestigious notions. I am as boring and as unremarkable as they come.
Oh, I highly doubt that. Yeah. I highly doubt.
Kelly, you could tell me you eat like, you know, Cheerios morning, noon, and night every single day, and I think I would still have the same excitement going on here. So it's awesome having you on. For those of you listening, you know, Kelly right now is, you know, the hype is real because, you know, your Black Widow series. I mean, that's the first thing that, you know, that I associate you with now, because that series so far, I think we're on issue 7. And Kelly was just nominated for an Eisner Award, which is basically kind of like the Oscars of or the Golden Globes of like the comic book world.
And it was very well deserved.
Oh my God. Yeah. Kelly, how does it feel to, you know, be an Eisner nomination for best new series of Black Widow?
It's exciting. It's exciting. You know, I've been here before. I think Hawkeye, we got nominated for best new series a few years ago. I think 2017 or 2018 maybe, and it was really exciting then. And then a couple years later I got a best writer nomination. But I'm really excited that people are responding to Black Widow. It seems to have really good word of mouth, and that I'm glad that people are sort of seeing the care and the quality that's going into it from sort of every angle. I sort of wish, this is a little controversial, I really wish when those nominations came out that they listed at least colorists along with the creative team. It only lists Elena and I, and while Elena obviously needs to be there, that just, you know, Jordi Belair's colors, they're so important to the visual identity of our book. It feels like a real slight to like not have her there. I don't know if that stuff is driven by the Eisners themselves or by the way publishers submit. I noticed that all the nominees in our category, it was only writer and artist, but that feels very old fashioned to me. So I'm a little upset about that, but it's hard to talk about because, you know, you're just really honored to be nominated and you don't want to upset anybody and you don't want to be disrespectful, but I really can't, overstate how important Jordi Belair is to this book. And so her not being there is weird.
It's amazing of you that you would even give credit to the colorist, because their job is more or less really overlooked in the industry. And for those who, you know, don't understand, it's just like, it helps bring the whole vision to life. It's like the glue that holds everything together.
It's so, so important. It's so important. And I fought hard for Jordi on this book. Well, that's a misnomer, because nobody was saying no. They love her there. They think she's great. I think they don't think she's a fit for every book, you know, like a bit, like I would probably have trouble getting her on Captain Marvel if I was trying to do that, because maybe they want a more sort of traditional superhero sensibility on that book. Yeah. But everyone was very on board that she would be a great fit here and for what I was trying to do, and also a great fit for Elena's work. And all of that bore out. But I mean, if I had my druthers, I think Jordi's a genius. So if I had my druthers, I'd put her on everything, including Captain Marvel, because I think she can do anything. I don't know whether she enjoys doing everything. I mean, I think she's so at the top of her game that she can really pick and choose the project she wants to be involved in. So yeah, it's really incredible. It's incredible that people are recognizing that we're trying to do something different with the book and that we're really pushing in a new direction. I don't love our chances. There's a lot of really good books in that category, and we're the only big two book, which is sort of a wonderful compliment, but also seems like steep odds for me. But what do I know?
Well, for anyone listening and who hasn't read Kelly Thompson's Black Widow, Kelly has been doing something phenomenal, which is taking, you know, Natasha in a whole new direction. It's way more grounded. At the same time, it's very clear to to her character. And if you're excited for the Black Widow movie that's coming out soon, or if you ever want to get to know the character or just have a little bit more introspective look into her, I would highly recommend picking up Black Widow by Kelly Thompson, because it is that book right now. And, you know, the numbers speak for themselves, the nominations speak for themselves. So definitely go, please check it out.
Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. Kelly, would you, you know, is in, this might be you know, a question that I'm going to ask it, because I love kind of getting the feel for this sort of stuff. But on, like, sure, you know, the scale of all the stuff that you've put out, you know, specific, I guess we'll keep it to the Marvel train. Like, would you say that you're, you know, most, you know, you're most proud of, like, the Black Widow book so far?
I think that for where I'm at in my career, I think, yes, I think I'm really happy with the whole vision of how that book has come together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Hawkeye was, you know, it was really early in my career at Marvel. But to me, that was, again, a sort of perfect team. Jordi Belair, again, coloring there. Leonardo Romero, who I just recently worked with both of them on a Black Hammer issue. That was so fun. Black Hammer Visions number 5. It's out now. And that's like a one shot, like you can read it as a sort of standalone. I mean, it certainly is enhanced. It's certainly enhanced by reading other Black Hammer stories. And in our case, especially that really great Skull Digger miniseries, but, it was a really a treat to be reunited with them. And I was very much reminded of how wonderful it was to work with that team, especially so early in my career. But, you know, Hawkeye is a book that, you know, whether you love it or hate it, I feel like it knew what it was on page one of issue one, you know, and we absolutely just, and I think that that's true of Black Widow too. I think they are books that have a vision for what they're trying to do. And some people are super on board for it and some people maybe are not, but it knows what it is. And that hasn't always been the case. I think West Coast Avengers also from Go knew what it was.
I missed that book so much.
Yeah, that was a fun story. It was really fun.
I think as we started losing our artists, as the writing was sort of on the wall that we were going to get canceled, it sort of lost itself a little bit. I blame myself a little bit for that. But, you know, I think, I don't know. I'm really happy with the Jessica Jones stuff I did with Mattia too. I think, you know, a good example of a book that is then this will be ironic because I think that, you know, Captain Marvel is probably one of the books that I'm the most known for at this point. You know, mm-hmm. We're approved through, I don't know, issue 40 or something, which is incredible because
that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, Captain Marvel has really struggled. I mean, most books struggle to get that run. I mean, most stuff is canceled before 20, you know, a lot of stuff is canceled before 10.
Unfortunately.
So,
right.
Yeah. It's a tough market out there. And if you're not named, you know, Spider-Man or Batman or Wolverine, it can be mm-hmm. a real struggle. So, but, you know, Captain Marvel is a book where I feel like it's more evolved. Maybe that's just because we've been going for so long. And so we've had to keep sort of reinventing ourselves and finding new ways. But that's a book that, even though I'm really proud of it, and I was on issue 1 and I am on issue 29, I just, it didn't have the same, this is who we are and we're going to run it all the way through, you know, like that consistency wasn't there.
I feel like that's something I also enjoy from your Captain Marvel, because it is a different flavor, you know?
Yeah, no, has, I mean,
it's kind of like each trade paperback is its own little story, but they're also all connected one way or the other. And then it references your other work, like the Captain Marvel, the end issue with that future timeline that I was very happy that we were brought back for. And I appreciate that. It's a different flavor for sure than your Black Widow or your Hawkeye, but it's still something that is very, very high quality.
Thank you. I think it also just sort of depends what you're interested in as far as like, you know, I really loved doing Mr. and Mrs. X. That was a really fun, light adventure book that I had a great time on. I love those characters. I love playing in the X-Men world. But, you know, I was very worried when we were going to put that book out because it was coming right after the Rogue and Gambit miniseries, which had gotten so much praise for being, you know, first of all, we took a lot of weird risks in there and swings, both with the art and sort of how we were doing the narrative. And I think it was a very ambitious book in what it was about and how it was trying to coalesce and repair a relationship that had sort of floundered in the years at Marvel, like from sort of ill attention and sometimes bad decisions. And so to me, Mr. and Mrs. X coming after that was, you know, it was really just some lighthearted fun. And that always bummed me out a little bit because I always want things to be more about something. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at Mr. and Mrs. X, I'm still really proud of it. I know a lot of people love it. I love it too, but I'm sort of searching for what's that book really about, you know? And I feel like I sort of dropped the ball there. And so that's sort of how I tend to look at these things. Like, and so, you know, Jessica Jones was really about something, you know, I don't know. I think Mr. and Mrs. X was a good lesson for me to make sure I really think about that when I'm first thinking about a character in a book, sort of the way I did with Black Widow, where, what am I trying to say with this character? Where am I hoping to move them to, you know, what's important? So, and then you hope you get the incredible team to help you, you know, realize that.
Of course. I wanted to ask you about that because you are a very versatile writer. I would say you've done very comedic characters and very comedic books like Hawkeye and West Coast Avengers, and you've done more serious things like your current Black Widow run. How do you balance that tackle? Like you've put your voice onto these amazing characters and you somehow managed to do it so well and capture their characteristics and their voice very well. I mean, I could read your Sabrina and I could read your Hawkeye and read your Captain Marvel, and they're all individually very you, but at the same time, they're very unique.
Well, thank you. I mean, honestly, that's my biggest thing when I try to approach a new book or a new character is, how do I create this voice here that's going to feel authentic to people who've been reading the character, that's going to feel correct for them, but also what can I bring to it that not every other writer can bring? Like, what's the Kelly Thompson element that will make it special, that is the reason someone's maybe reading instead of someone else's Jessica Jones or someone else's Black Widow? So I try my best to be true to the voice and then infuse some of myself in it. I think that infusion probably changes depending on what the book is, but even in Black Widow, it might be like a little bit of a sort of a sarcastic sense of humor. It's starting to happen a lot more now that Yelena is taking a bigger role. And we also sort of brought in Anya, which is really fun for these new arcs because, you know, Yelena comes from a very like dark, sarcastic place.
Yeah.
And Anya is like pure sort of brightness and goofiness, you know? So, and both of them contrasted against a Natasha who is, you know, it's not that she's funny. It's not that she's not clever, but she's just more serious. She plays her cards very close. She doesn't let everyone in. And particularly for the state she's in after the events of the first arc, you know, she's really going through some stuff. God, so
that first arc was really gut wrenching to read.
Oh my God, it hurt. You should feel especially like this book was something special because I actually gave it to my girlfriend who is not the biggest comic reader. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, the movie's coming out. You know, she goes to all the Marvel movies with me. And so I was like, you got to see it. And I was like, hey, you know, this series just came out. It's a really good starting point. And let me just, you know, put a little carrot in where I'm at right now. That this book was phenomenal for people that don't really know Black Widow. And I'm kind of on that boat a little bit.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
Yeah. Yep. That.
And I'm a hardcore Black Widow fan. I've read every single. So it's good for both, you know. Both
that I mean, listen, that's literally what we try to do every time. So the fact that it worked for old readers or experienced readers and was accessible to new readers, that's literally the goal of every single comic book. So I feel like my work here is done.
Yeah,
you've done it perfectly well.
She was reading, you know, I'm not going to talk spoilers because you all should go read the book, but something big happens in, oh my goodness, is it like issue? It's like the biggest cliffhanger maybe of the year, honestly, with an explosion.
Issue four.
And yeah. She was reading it and she goes, oh my God. And I was like, yeah, right. It's cool. It's cool. But where I was going with this was we were just talking about Yelena. And she has a very interesting sort of spot in the Marvel universe. You know, sometimes, is she on Black Widow's side? Is she not? And that's kind of what makes her character interesting. But I've been wanting to ask a writer like this who kind of is writing a big book like Black Widow, you know, she's got a movie coming out. Is there anyone at Marvel that ever tells you or other writers, you know, there's a movie coming out, we want you to incorporate this character so that people can see it in the, does that ever happen?
I think something like what you're talking about happens, but it doesn't happen in the way you're talking about, because the people at Marvel, I think there's two things. One, they often don't know either what the stuff is. I mean, super high level people, I'm sure, know a lot, but mm-hmm. like my editor isn't like handed a script for Black Widow and gone, hey, here's what's going to be happening, so make sure to adjust your comics or whatever.
Yeah.
But the other part of that is, even if they were handed that, it's really important to Marvel that they be the foot forward, right? They need to be telling the news stories. They need to be ahead of what the MCU is doing. They need to be breaking the new ground that the MCU wants to adapt, not following behind. And that's for a lot of reasons, including because that's the way it works. But it's also just because comics are a really fast medium, despite how work intensive they are. Gosh, you know, yeah. Movies are years for them to come out. I mean, even longer if you have a pandemic. So yeah. It just wouldn't be that practical. But I will say that conversations that do happen is that, you know, we were always sort of planning to have, well, I was always considering and using Yelena in a small way for the first arc. But as we were seeing how much Florence Pugh was in the movie,
yeah.
And she's fantastic. I mean, oh, I haven't God, seen the yeah. movie, but she's an incredible actress and she seems like she's going to be an incredible Yelena. As that was happening, I felt, and I think everyone felt, like, let's use her more. Like, why not? And we were already using Alexi in a sort of weird way that was not necessarily against what the mm-hmm. movie seemed to be doing. So we were like, well, let's just lean into it then. That's good for us. It's good for everyone. And so it was a really easy decision to both use them a little more or differently in the first arc, and then also to keep Yelena around, which I had been thinking I needed someone around in the post first arc because of the state Black Widow was going to be in. You know, she's not someone who's just going to narrate everything in her head. So I needed someone sort of drawing that stuff out of her. And there were some options for who that could be, but Yelena made the most sense to me in a lot of ways. And yeah. So that just turned out to be a thing that they were like, yeah, lean into it. That's great. That's good for all of us. That's sort of, you know, what's that phrase about a high tide rises all ships or whatever, like, you know, it benefits everyone to sort of have that sort of accidental synergy. So it doesn't happen exactly like that, but like conversations like that do happen. Sure.
Ah, okay. Thank you for that in-depth answer. Okay. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. And you know, that's very cool that you put in Yelena, because, you know, Anas and another friend of mine was the one who was like, you got to read Black Widow. And I started looking into it and I saw Yelena and I was like, you know, I've never really given her a shot, because honestly, she doesn't have that much like airtime, comic book time, I guess we'll call it. So I didn't know that much about her and I was excited to know more. So I'm kind of excited to see how you play with Yelena going forward. That's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a different look for her. You know, she's mm-hmm. been very villainous in the comics, and then she's been also a little less villainous. She's been an ally sometimes. She's also been sort of horribly abused by a lot of people, up to including obviously the Red Room that abused Natasha. So, you know, there's some great similarities there. I think she's traditionally, in the stories I've read, been portrayed, I don't know. I hope I'm giving her enough panel time that we're gonna get a chance to see some of these layers, instead of what has sometimes just through the, I think the problem for Yelena is that the stories she's in are almost always Black Widow stories, not Yelena Belova stories. And so, you know, that naturally undercuts her. And that's true here as well, but I'm trying my best to show the dimensions of this relationship and the dimensions of this character.
She's a very intricate character.
Yeah. She is very fun to play with, because Yelena is that sort of perfect character that's not the technical protagonist, but, you know, she really embodies that old idea of everyone is the hero of their own story. Mm-hmm. You know, Yelena absolutely thinks she's the protagonist in her own story. Like she has
that main character syndrome.
Yeah. Natasha's great, but she's Yelena Belova. And, you know, and so I think that's something that I've found readers really respond to. I mean, you see it across the board in how people really respond to anti-hero characters, everyone Definitely. From Loki to Emma Frost, right? They,
Absolutely.
They're more gray area. They don't have to be so shiny and perfect as, you know, a Captain Marvel or a Captain America. It gives you a lot of room to have a lot of fun.
Well, we are definitely having a lot of fun watching their relationship evolve. They have, there's a new dimension to everything. And I really wanted to ask you about, you've written for so many characters right now at this point. You've done anything from Rogue and Gambit to Jessica Jones to Captain Marvel and currently Black Widow. Is there any character at Marvel that you're still hoping to sink your teeth into and get a chance to write, maybe for again or for the first time?
Well, again, I have to say almost all the characters that I've written, I'd really love to write again. I'd love to write She-Hulk again because I didn't get to do too much with her from A-Force. I'd mm-hmm. love to write Jessica Jones again. I'd love to write Kate Bishop again. You know, Rogue and Gambit are, you know, faves since I was a teenager. So I'd love to revisit these guys. I think that Elsa Bloodstone is a character that I put in almost anything because I think she's very flexible and funny and interesting. I'd love to do something larger with her. I've only gotten to write Magic in cameos, but she's one of my favorite characters. Sort of the same with Emma Frost. I've put her in Jessica Jones. I put her in Captain Marvel. I'd love to get a crack at her for a little more. I want to say that I really love Asgard characters like Thor and Loki and all that stuff. But even though I do love them and I love that sort of magical world building and all of that that comes with that, I'm not that great at the speech. So it's really an effort for me whenever I'm like, ooh, I'm going to put Thor in this. And then later I'm like, oh, why did I put Thor in this? His dialogue is so hard. You know
what? I could understand that. I definitely could understand that.
So I don't know if I'd want to do a whole book of Thor and Asgard related characters, even though I'm a big fan. So it's a lot of, sweat equity.
I would personally love to see you do something for Krakoa. I mean, your work on Gambit and Rogue really evolved their characters and the impact is still there to this day in their powers and their relationship and their dynamic. And I would love to see you do something interesting again with the characters on Krakoa. Like there's so much to get out there.
Yeah. I think that, yes, I would love to be playing in that pool, but I think we all can say that pool is pretty well tended right now. I mean, they've got lot of amazing books, a lot of amazing people doing those books. So, you know, I don't think they really need me, unfortunately. Maybe someday.
Oh, never say never.
I'm
gonna keep my hopes up.
I'm very excited to see Pepe Larraz drawing Rogue again, though. That's a seat we all want to take. His Rogue is incredible. I got to meet him at a summit a while back, and a Marvel summit, and he drew me a little Rogue sketch. He's a terrific guy. He's he's just amazing. Someone that talented and that sort of humble is really blows my mind.
I know.
Well, there's you. Let me just feed into your ego a little bit here.
It's a little bit.
Kelly, I have a question for you. You know, it's always fun to kind of know, and I don't know if you were maybe privy to this information going forward, but it's always interesting to me to find out what if, and, you know, I understand that sometimes you guys have bake-offs for series. Were you in a pool of people pitching the Black Widow series or how did that work?
No, well, I've been very lucky in that I've only lost a couple bake-offs at Marvel in my early days. They've been very generous with me and I hope I've earned that. But that pretty much when they ask me now if I want to do a book, it's they want me to do it.
Okay.
And I'm not competing with anyone or I'm not having to prove I've got an idea with my pitch. I mean, they just have a relationship with me and they see that I sort of know what I'm doing. And so I get a chance, I get that sort of luxury afforded to me. But I will say that while there were a few missed opportunities in my early days, I did actually pitch a version of the Black Widow that you have today, at least that first arc, almost 2 years before I wow. ended up pitching the one that got greenlit.
Oh my God.
And I think they, I don't know if they didn't like it or they didn't know that I just didn't have it, or they just thought it was the right wrong timing for it. So I think they, or they maybe already had plans, you know, that happens too. I think, it was sometime after the Wade Samney stuff ended that I was trying really hard to get her. And then I think since that, around that time, then they did the Soska Sisters miniseries, and then Jodie Hauser did a miniseries. And so after the Jodie miniseries, my editor, Sarah, came to me and she's like, well, so Black Widow looks like it's going to be available and they want to try to, you know, do an ongoing, although it's probably going to be pitched as one arc initially. Mm-hmm. And she was like, do you want it? And I was like, yes. I was like, and I already have a pitch, which I sent to a different editor like 2 years ago, but it's still what I want to do.
That's awesome.
And I was like, but I got to tell you right now, it's a hard turn away from Red Room stories. And she was like, thank God. And I was like, okay, we're going to be fine. And I just like to clarify, because people think I'm crapping on the Red Room stories, and I'm not. I think they're great. I think it's an incredible origin story. I think it's so cool, but I think we've seen it, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot to tell.
Brubaker did this incredible stuff with Winter Soldier and Natasha and the Red Room and all of that. Marjorie Liu told a great story that was Red Room adjacent. It was incredible. And Wade and Samney did some Red Room-ish stuff, you know? So, and those are some of the best stories we've ever had for Natasha. And they're fairly recent, you know, they're in the last 10, 12 years. So, maybe not the Brubaker, maybe that goes a little bit further back. But so I just felt like, I have no problem with that. I love those stories, but it feels well covered. And I just sort of, why do we have to keep going back to that? Natasha is so much more than that. And so I wanted to tell a story that was really going to change her in a permanent way, which is very hard to do in ongoing comics. And I wasn't sure Marvel would go for it. They don't always love it when you give someone a child or something that's going to age the character or tie them down. And I get it. But because I had a sort of out for this of how I thought it should work, I think they let me take the chance, and it's really paid off, I think.
It really paid off. And like, as you said, you've taken her in a completely new direction. And I feel like that's something that she really needed as a character to grow, to have more stories, because she's so intricate and complex. There's so much to tell, so many, you know, avenues to explore. And I feel like if I would recommend a Black Widow run to anyone, I would recommend Marjorie's run because it was genuinely so fun and good. And I would recommend yours because it's a different flavor as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. That's great. That's high praise. I love that Name of the Rose run. It's incredible.
So Kelly, we have this question that we ask our guests whenever they come on, because it is genuinely something that we are very interested in. And I think anyone who is a huge fan of comic books would be interested in knowing as well about you. What is your background with comic books? How did you get into comics in the first place?
So I, like many people, there's sort of two origin stories, but the more obvious one is the X-Men animated series indoctrinated me.
Oh, hell yes.
I fell in love with it. It was how I discovered superhero comics, or my brother actually discovered it at the mall. In my mind, it's several weeks after we first found and fell in love with the show, but it could have been longer. He came home with Uncanny X-Men number 290 with Storm on the cover. And he's like, look, it's the girl from the show. And I was like, oh my God. And that was it. I was fully hooked. I had wanted to be a writer for a very long time. And I also sort of wanted to be an artist, but I wasn't really particularly gifted in that way. But this merging of writing and pictures, and superheroes sort of broke my brain open. And like, really, I just, you know, I wasn't just a fan at that point. I wanted to do this now. Like, it was immediate. You know, I didn't just start writing or start reading comics. I started writing them and trying to draw them and trying to make up my own characters and all that stuff. Wow. So although that said, I have to give credit, you know, I did have comics in my sort of blood from not like, oh, I have relatives that did it, but when I was a child, I read a lot of Archie comics. I didn't realize there was a whole world of comics. They were just these things I got in the grocery store that I loved. But I think it's an important part of the process because, you know, for a long time before I started being a creator, I wrote about comics. Both I reviewed them and I also had an op-ed column at CBR. And, you know, some of the things I did was a ladies comic project where I would send comics to women who had varying degrees of experience with comics, including none. And later I expanded the project and I was just sending it to non-comics readers to see how they responded to comics and things like that. And wow. I was really amazed by how difficult the medium was for people who had never been exposed to it. But people who had been exposed to it when they were younger, it came very naturally to them. Whether they liked them or not, they had no trouble understanding, you know, how to read it or what it, you know, means or anything. So even though the X-Men was really what led me back into falling in love with the whole industry and like, you know, making comics and all of that, I did have that understanding of comics as a medium in my brain already, which I think was really helpful to falling in love with them. And then, I ended up, I pursued that, you know, as sort of a teen in my room, drawing and writing and whatever. It's very horrible stories, I'm sure. I eventually went to college to study. I studied graphic design was my major, although, you know, when you first get there, you're not doing any of that. But in my second year, I started doing some actual graphic design classes and I really liked them. I thought it was great, but I was also taking a comic book making class, like how to write and draw comics. That's from fun. from a local guy. Cool. Who ran the local shop and had a zine. And so I was taking these couple times a week night classes that he would do like in the fall and the spring or whatever. And I had been considering transferring to Savannah College of Art and Design or SVA, I think was the only other credited college at the time that had sequential art classes. There's a lot more now. So it was sort of like Joe Kubert School, SVA and Savannah College of Art and Design were sort of the only things going, you know, back then. And I was really unsure about transferring, you know, it was a big change moving across the country, all this stuff. And I was really on the fence until I had a graphic design assignment that we were designing this packaging, and for extra credit, you could actually build the packaging and like bring in the prototype. Well, you had to bring a prototype of the bottle you were designing, but if you wanted the extra credit, you could design like the six pack it came in or like whatever. Right. And I was like, oh, I really like this assignment. I'm going to do the extra credit. And so I did it. I think my project was good, whatever. I came in, every single person did the extra credit. And I was like, I'm never going to be the best at this because these people go home and dream about graphic design and I dream about comics. So what am I doing? What am I doing with my life? And so that was when I made the decision to transfer to the Savannah College of Art and Design. I took a year off to earn some money and buy a car and things like that. But then I went to SCAD and, you know, I've never really let go of comics since. I mean, I've had a lot of normal straight jobs that had nothing to do with comics as I sort of made my way through the world. But eventually I sort of found my way back and it's been very successful in the last 5 or 6 years. I've been very lucky. I've also worked very hard, but I've been very lucky. Definitely. Like a lot of things struck at the right time. And I was sort of, you know, I think, you know, it doesn't, it's like, being a woman in comics is a problem a lot of the time, but the timing for me was pretty good because comics has really wanted to find female voices. And so I'm sure there are ways in which being different than a lot of my peers has helped me as well. So I try and to.
We couldn't be more thankful for it, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank
you. Kelly, I have a quick question for you. You know, in, you mentioned that, you know, that comic hooked you with the Storm cover. You know, what was like, did you ever read, you know, any, you know, what was like the first series you read, like start to finish, you know, issue one through whatever, like when did you find yourself reading comics in that way? And like, what was the character that you read the series of?
Well, I think it's probably just X-Men, because I wasn't that far. I don't know what issue X-Men was on when we found it, but X-Men 1 was all over the comic shop walls, like, you know, which cover do you want or whatever. That was actually one of my first comics I bought was X-Men number 1, also my brother X-Men number 1, and we're talking about the Jim Lee Chris Claremont relaunch. Oh, yeah. Of course
I got that hanging over me right now. That's too funny.
Wish I could afford the other one, but let's be realistic.
Yeah, so, really.
And that was my first. So this first trip to the comic shop was also my first venture into variant covers, which I did not understand because we both bought the same book with different covers. I think my brother got the Cyclops and I got the Rogue and Gambit, of course. And then we were in the car and he was reading it. And I looked at him and I was like, hey, that's mine. I'm reading that story. And he's like, no, this is mine. And he shows me the cover and I'm like, oh. So they do different covers for the same issue. How weird. Anyway, well, little did I know.
Variant covers. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, So, I mean, that one has got to be it, because we weren't that far. I mean, they were on issue 12 or 15 or something. I don't know. And I obviously like gobbled all of those up. I mean, I was so into the X-Men. I mean, I think that for the first, gosh, probably 3, 4, 6 months, it was probably all X-Men, like me finding all the old issues, going through all back issues to try and find all and read all the stories I could. And I was very lucky, because I don't know if you guys were around at this point, but, you know, they started doing classic reprints with these great, often Mike Mignola covers. Mm-hmm. And so that made it really cheap and easy to find a lot of, it made it a lot easier to find, you know, the holes in my collection. And I didn't care about, oh, this isn't the right cover or this is a reprint. I just wanted to read the stories. I just wanted to know every single thing Rogue had ever done. Let's see it, you know? So that was probably the first, just because it was there and it was the timing and I was so obsessed with X-Men. So.
Right. Oh, that's so fun. I love that it was the X-Men too. That's, yeah.
Of course it was.
For a lot of us, yeah. It was.
I mean, honestly, it took me a really long time to get into like the Avengers. It wasn't the movies like so many people, although I understand why, but I think it was Bendis's Avengers. And I know that the people feel mixed about that, but I really love his dialogue. He's very funny to me, and his Spider-Man, particularly mixed in with the Avengers, was I just really enjoyed it. And oh, so that,
yeah, that's so I was like, stuff. Oh,
maybe I haven't been giving these characters their due, and so that led to me digging really into all those characters and falling in love with so many of them. So
that's amazing. Well, we have taken enough of your time, but before we let you go, I would like to play a little game with you that I came up specifically for you.
Oh, no. Now the pressure's on.
It's going to be fun.
I just don't want to fail you. I'm sure it's fun.
I don't know.
That's the pressure.
There is no right or wrong answers. It's all up to you.
All right. Tell me.
Okay, so you've written for a bunch of characters, and I've read most of your work, and I was very interested to see how you would think of it. So let's say, who would you think is the better detective, Nancy Drew or Jessica Jones?
I think it's Jessica, but maybe only because she's older. Like, if it's an older Nancy Drew, maybe she gets there and can beat her. I think Nancy Drew maybe has more, like, intrinsic talent.
Mm-hmm.
But Jessica's got more sort of the road weary, hard as nails thing you need to survive being a private detective, right? Like,
oh my gosh, yeah.
I feel like Nancy Drew would see what like a dark, dismal world that is, and she'd be like, you know what, maybe there's a different career for me now that I'm out of high school. I'm going to make better choices.
Who would win in a fist fight, Captain Marvel or She-Hulk?
Ooh.
Oh, that's tough. I'm not great at who would wins because to me, it's any given day, a different thing could happen that tilts something one way or the other, especially when you've got two like really balanced people like She-Hulk and Captain Marvel. I mean, technically, I think I have to say Captain Marvel because I had her beat her in her last Avengers arc.
I remember.
But she had to really do a horrible thing in order to get that win. And that's not great. So, you know, okay. She did that thing where she absorbed the electrical energy in her brain, which Al Ewing gave to me, by the way. I was desperate.
No way. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, I was desperate. You know, I was in a Slack with a bunch of other writers and I was like, ugh. I was like, I can't just have these guys punching them. I need something creative. Who's got ideas? And we were sort of batting some things around. And I think Al mentioned, he was like, what if she absorbs electrical energy in her brain? I was like, sold. That's our winner.
That's awesome. I love little things when writers kind of work together like that.
Yeah.
That's so interesting to me.
Yeah. Al is incredible. He's one of the most generous creators I've ever seen in the room. Like he's so additive. You know, even if you're trying to do something that's really messing with his stuff, it takes him about 2 minutes to look at it and go, actually, if I do this, that makes everything work even better. I approve. You know, it's like such a great way to be. It's a way I endeavor to be more like, but I doubt I'll ever achieve Al's level of it. I think that is one of the big things that a Marvel writer got me. Also, Jason Aaron is the one who suggested when we were in the room, when I was pitching Jessica Jones' Purple Daughter to everyone in the room. Everyone was really into it and really supportive and it was great. But it was supposed to be a different child, not Danny, initially in the pitch. And Jason was like, I really like this pitch. He's like, I think it's great. He's like, but I think you're making a huge mistake if you just don't make it Danny. There's so much more emotional real estate for you if you do that. And God, he was so right. It's such a strong book just solely on that basis of the emotional component is so huge.
All right. Who is, and this is very, you know, I would say tread carefully here because these are two very fan favorite characters, but I just had to.
Okay.
Who is the better witch, Sabrina or Nico Minoru?
Gosh, I think Nico has more raw power at her disposal, but she also, her power is very limiting. And so she has to be incredibly creative in how she applies it. Sabrina, on the other hand, you know, man, she's got it in her blood. You know, it comes very naturally to her. Sort of feels like there's no limit for her. I'm going to go with Nico initially, but over time, an older Sabrina might be able to take her, like with more experience and more spells under her belt and all of that. But Nico initially, I think, has got it.
I could see that. I agree, actually. And last, but definitely not least, who is funnier, Deadpool or Gwenpool?
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's especially tough because they really have the same brand of humor too. Like it's a very similar.
I wasn't gonna make everything just like who would win a fist fight. I had their own categories.
No, it's good. It's good. I like it. This is maybe gonna piss people off, but I think I'm gonna go with Deadpool.
Yes.
Wow. Go with Deadpool. Although, man, I loved writing her in West Coast Avengers. I was very hesitant to put her on the book.
Really?
Yeah,
loved her in it. Yeah.
She turned out amazing. Although, you know, we didn't really get to finish what we were trying to do. But to me, you know, they really were interested in having her on the book because she's got a really great fan base and she's a great character. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, but her power doesn't really work in a team. Like it's not conducive to a team. It's conducive to a solo where she's in control of the narrative and, you know, all these things she's doing. I was like, how does that work in a team setting? Like, we can't even really say what her powers are. And that sort of conversation became my idea for, well, her powers sort of don't work in a team setting. Like when she's not in control of the narrative, her powers are different or limiting or things. And so we were really having fun playing with that. Also, I had no intention of getting her and Quentin together. It just happened. Yeah. It's just a thing that sometimes happens when you're writing, like, and I don't regret it because I love how it turned out, but considering
it works so well,
it was so great and it was so fun. But considering we got canceled at 10, I was playing out a slower burn on America and Ramon. And because we got canceled, I just didn't get really the time to do what I wanted there to like really explore that. And I'm glad to see other writers have picked it up and like kept them together and stuff. So that's great. That's a huge win. But, you know, I do, especially because I really want to see more diversity and I try as hard as I can to bring that to my books, that I felt bad in the end that I ended up sort of, you know, letting two characters that I would describe as bisexual anyway, Gwen and Quentin, putting them in a sort of hetero pairing. And also they're the white kids, and that ending up happening early in the arc. And then two women of color getting sort of backburnered. And they weren't supposed to be backburnered. It was just supposed to be a slower development of that relationship, but comics being what they are, I should have been smarter about it. I should have realized, you know, you live and learn.
That's true. And you know what? You said that we would be disillusioned by you by the end of this. And because you said Deadpool, I feel personally attacked. What a big Deadpool fan I am.
Oh my goodness, you are.
But you have to remember, I mean, I fall in love with almost every character I write. Like in the pitching process, when they handed me A-Force, my first thought was, will they let me get rid of Dazzler? I don't really want to write Dazzler. Really? I don't even know that I want to write Medusa. Yeah, I was like, I'm not into it. But by the time you start getting into it and you start excavating the character and figuring out what you want to say to them, and like they come up with little jokes, and you, as you start building that, I love Dazzler now. The reason I didn't like her before, because I was because Rogue and Dazzler hated each other when I was a kid, and I was a Rogue fan. So I carried that Dazzler resentment all the way forward into adulthood for a weird thing that's not even real. And then I fell in love with her. And of course, Ben Caldwell's design didn't make it hard. She was incredible looking. Oh, yeah. I mean, I went on to create Dazzler Thor. Of course, I fell in love with her.
Jeez.
So, you know, Gwenpool had a shot, but then I wrote 10 issues of Deadpool and I just, it was hard. I didn't get as much time with Gwen. So,
you know, I'm going to ask you this question again, and maybe someday you'll do a Gwenpool movie. Yeah.
There you go.
I'll come back and I'll circle back to this. I'm not taking this answer.
I understand. That's fair.
Well, thank you so, so much for your time. We loved having you on. You are an amazing creator and we're both huge, huge fans. So I'm still a little bit starstruck, honestly.
Well, thank you. You guys are really nice. I had a great time.
We're glad to hear it.
See what more you bring out in this beautiful Marvel universe and all of your other adventures as well. And for anyone, you know, who's listening and just getting to know Kelly along with us, please do check out her works. I don't even know where to start recommending. You know, her Kate Bishop is amazing. So if you're excited for Hawkeye coming out and Hailee Steinfeld playing Kate, definitely pick that up. If you're excited for the Black Widow movie, check out her ongoing right now, the Eisner-nominated Black Widow series. If you're a fan of Captain Marvel, her Captain Marvel run is amazing and very, very well done. And if you're a fan of Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, do check that out. If you're a fan of Nancy Drew, do check that out. If you like Gem and the Holograms, there's so much to dig into with Kelly's writing. And there's so much good stuff to find.
Thank you.
Yeah. Kelly, thank you so much for your time. And have a great rest of your week. And we look forward to seeing your name on the stands more. So thank you so much.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks so much.